It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other toppings, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now, Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time for deep bunkers and undulating fairways.
Oh, do I hear the sound of breaking glass? No? That looked fine until you hit it.
This is an Open Championship Week edition of Dirt and Spray.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club, the best course in the Northwest for year-round golf. Book your tee time at langdonfarms.com.
Dirt and Spray on 1080.
What are you two doing out here? Why are you not at school?
The Fan.
Hey, let's do this final hour of Dirt and Spray here on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan, 99.5 HC2, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube. Good morning, everybody. Happy Thursday to you. Open Championship underway. We'll give you a look at the leaderboard throughout the final hour of the show. Got some NFL nuggies I want to get to. There's been a lot of stuff kind of piling up in my NFL notes this week that we haven't really gotten to. We just kind of kicked the can down the road, including the Najee Harris thing. Have you guys followed that story at all?
Yeah. Fireworks, man.
Fireworks.
Eye injuries.
Stay away.
Supposed to be ready for the start of the season, though.
Not training camp.
He's been through.
And they're not saying anything about it. They just all of a sudden out of nowhere were like, by the way, he's not going
to
be there for training camp.
Injury list to open up training camp.
Not
so
good.
I would add to the final hour of content, we need to follow back up on the Coldplay couple.
Yes, we have an update on the Coldplay couple that went viral.
Oh, they found their names.
This is the danger of the internet now.
Yeah.
Like, there's
AI,
no hiding, man.
Facial recognition.
You will be found.
Yeah, not at all.
And if there's a funny video that somebody grabs, that video is going to get posted and then reposted and then reposted. And good luck.
What happened to the days of just hooking up at a hotel and not needing to parade around your affair?
You go to a Motel 6 at 11 on a
Tuesday.
Absolutely. What happened to those days of cheating?
Why don't you guys class it up? Yeah. Going to Coldplay concerts?
Cheating
at a Jumbotrons?
Cheating at a concert's just way too aggressive. You deserve what you got.
Football, concerts, like, have your affair like a normal person, quietly in a hotel room, and move on with your day.
Private, not out in public.
Generations don't know how to be inconspicuous.
These are old. They look like they're in their 50s. It's a CEO and an HR.
They're super old. They look like they're 53.
Yeah, let's just
don't
get to it now.
Don't you want it out there at that point?
I will say this about them. I don't know who their significant others are. Maybe she's with a dude who's given up, and maybe he is just rich and powerful.
Like, I mean, if you're out,
they're pretty hot. They're a pretty hot older couple.
If you're out in public at something that's that public,
if they had like a goodgray.com, I think people would pay to watch what's going on.
Goodgray.com, that should be a website.
They're prepared. One of them is prepared for it.
She looks like she's keeping up with whatever the times are saying. You know what I mean? Like, G-strings? Oh, okay. And he looks like, you know, he's working out pretty regularly. This is a hot couple. Yeah. That's hooking up behind each other's spouses' backs, but clean it up a little bit, man.
Yeah,
head of HR. She's the head of HR, and she's like, yeah, I'm going to be messy.
There's a video that came out, of, for those who are just turning on the radio wondering what the hell we're talking about, of a couple at a Coldplay concert in Boston last night, and they were, you know, swaying with the music. He had his arms over her.
Looked like they were on the big green monster.
They were, like, on the green monster watching the concert. I'm sure that's a cool place to see a concert. And they showed him on the Jumbotron, and immediately when the Jumbotron panned to them, they, like, jumped out of the picture because they're clearly there when they're not supposed to be there. They're cheating on their significant others.
Yeah.
And they tried to hide away from the camera, and this video has gone viral. And to the point now where you can't hide from anybody, is it has been discovered that evidently he is the CEO of a company.
Yeah.
And the gal who he was, you know, hey, is his head of HR.
Yeah.
So.
Now, here's the only other counter.
Good luck with that.
They're not married. This isn't an affair. But it is CEO with head of HR, and they didn't disclose the naughty business.
It's a non-disclosed relationship.
I mean, he's clearly disrobed himself in front of her, but they have not disclosed the relationship publicly. And so it's like, we don't want to do that.
Good luck with that complicated
unsanctioned
situation.
Fraternization.
Yeah. Well, do you feel confident in reporting your boss if the head of the HR is stooping the boss?
No.
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 Let alone if what if the HR gal has a complaint about the boss? But they're dating.
Dude, she's on Thunder Mountain right now. She's not going to take my complaints seriously.
There's no way this ends well.
Goodgray.com. Should be a real list. Should
I think
be
that's
a real website.
TM, TM.
Okay.
TM, TM that bad boy.
All right.
Lots to get to. NFL notes coming up in a moment. I saw this earlier this week, and it coincided with something that is going on, which, by the way, my least favorite coach in the sport, Eli Drinkwitz, is just making horrible jokes today at SEC Media Day.
Well, I did some digging on that because I told you some of those jokes. He's doing it because literally everybody left.
Because nobody cares about Missouri. Right. Your program's irrelevant. Nobody. Yeah. And people forget they're even in the SEC.
Should have
shots fired at Missouri.
Should have your t-shirt on.
Oh, they should still have that t-shirt.
They need to space out the five teams that people care about in that conference. They need to make, if you're going to do a four-day media day,
you got to have Georgia be one day, Alabama be one day, Texas be one day, LSU be one day. Like, you got to spread it out. You can't have multiple on one day.
Yeah.
Because then you end up with a Missouri-Mississippi State day and everybody's leaving town. Because nobody cares.
I'd throw a miss in that if you didn't name them.
Yeah, he's making, like, JFK assassination jokes today at his press conference. Nobody asked me about the Epstein files. Like, that's, all right. It's original.
He watched the ESPYs last night. Is that what we know?
Maybe that's what he was doing, trying to take a Gillis joke. So this is all SEC Media Days are going on right now. I'm curious. So a two-part question for you guys. One, how do we feel about the documentary that comes out the year after? So this is kind of a new thing that we're getting a lot of. Like, the quarterback documentary just came out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Burrow, Kirk Cousins, and...
Right, Goff.
Goff. I don't think it's Goff. Is it Goff?
Yeah, it is Goff.
Is it Goff? Okay. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, why don't you watch it?
Maybe I should. But it comes out the next year, right? And so you're reliving the year previous. Maybe it's a little appetizer for football for you. Do we like that kind of documentary?
Well,
or do we prefer more of like a in-season Hard Knock style if you are going to watch one that's almost a week later throughout the course of the season?
The real problem I have with either scenario is that these are controlled by the athletes and teams now, so they're not genuine things.
That's fair.
There's a little say and like, no, I don't want that to get out. Cut that. And that bothers me.
Mm.
If you're going to do it transparently.
Mm.
Now, I have fallen out of love with Hard Knocks. I think it's kind of just run its course. And I could be off on this. Burrow is a special case study in how popular he is and how, you know, big he is as a quarterback. If I'm a Bengals fan, because they were in the Magic Hat today as well. Their draft pick, maybe in next year's draft.
Yeah, he might just...
He has reportedly gone back to Texas A&M, and he's just working out, and he's fully prepared to just not play for them.
Yeah.
And then somehow there's a little thing where he could maybe be in the draft next year. We'll have to wait and see. I don't want to watch this. And I love Burrow. But, like, if I'm a Bengal, why do I want to relive what last year was? That was terrible.
Yeah, as a Bengal fan, I wouldn't have any desire to watch it at all.
Like,
it'd be more so just of, like, I'm a random football fan, and I don't really care about the Bengals, and I want to see what his season looked like behind the scenes.
Well, one of the cuts that went viral was him at Tennessee. They beat Tennessee, but they played poorly, and he's on the sideline, and they're wrapping up the win, and he's just like, this is ugly, man. You know, dropping expletive after expletive, and his coach is like, I know, we'll clean up things, but let's just enjoy it. And he's like, no, it's embarrassing.
Yeah, they won like 38-34 or something, jumped off sides a bunch.
I already knew he felt that way. I could see it when I watched the games every weekend. So I don't know. I think if it's a good season, I want to watch it. If it's a really bad, disappointing season, I'm not as inclined to want to relive it.
We had Kirk Cousins' wife crying on the show because he's such a stand-up guy. He called Michael Penix when he got benched. That happened. That clip went viral.
Yeah, I think that's both admirable and real love. There's a relationship there that I'm really buying, like they're really in as a partnership.
Sure.
But there's also a part of me that's like, unfortunately, kind of mean. And I'm like, he's given you an infinite supply of Coles money. Deal with it. Like, I'm sorry he's not the starter all year. You got $100 million to eventually get benched. I get it. You're rooting for him. You've been rooting in his corner his whole life. But also there's this part of me, it's like, that's what the money's for, lady.
Go to Coles.
Mrs. Cousins.
So the reason I asked this question, and now I feel like I know the answer to it, mm-hmm. because this has propaganda written all over it, and I'm wondering if it will come anywhere near my television. On August 5th, did you see what's getting released on Netflix?
No.
They're doing this in a...
I think I saw a tease for this by the person.
So there is a new documentary coming out on August 5th on Netflix, and it is following the entire season last year of SEC football. And it's called Any Given Saturday.
No, I saw that.
And they basically had behind-the-scenes camera access to every coach, every player, every locker room, every moment, every big game. And I saw it, and I'm like, man, that's a really good trailer. It kind of gets me juiced for college football season. But it's very weird to relive a season that I just watched.
Because you know what the results are going to be.
I know what the results are going to be, and it's...
Gentlemen, we got a big game today!
Yeah, you're going to lose.
You're going to lose bad. You might as well get out of town now. Run! So there's, I'll probably dive into an episode or two just as I'm like jonesing for something football related in the middle of August and it's two weeks away.
I won't watch the full season. I mean, unless it grabs
But this is going to be propaganda to its fullest. Well, this is going to be SEC, nobody's better than us.
Is that any different than watching Feinbaum every day?
Well, that's
true. It's the same thing.
Yeah. A lot of Diego Pavia in this thing.
We talked a lot last year about that team out west. And their own team documentary they did in Eugene.
Yeah.
I mean,
that one felt more.
I know it's different because it's in the
more
moment.
Cultivated
season.
For the fans, too. And it wasn't like a Netflix documentary. It was like, hey, Duck fans, go on YouTube or Twitter and watch the 30-minute episode of what our team did in camp last week. I'm curious if they do that again. That was a big hit for Duck fans last year.
Yeah, I'm curious about Media Day in general next week. Like, how are they going to carry themselves? We know Lanning is confident, right? He trusts in what he's building.
Right.
Are we getting. What's the shenanigans we're getting?
Are we getting a duck?
We're not going to get a floating river duck, I don't imagine. They're a creative down in
Eugene. It's in Vegas, too, now this year, so I don't know where you float in the river. Where do you take to Vegas?
Well, yeah, how do you overtake a casino? Like, you've done something. They're doing something.
What's the big fountain there in Vegas, the famous fountain?
Oh, in front of the Bellagio?
Is that the Bellagio fountain? Yeah, can you change the colors of it, green and yellow, for the week?
Yeah, is there a way they've
something like those
in where the show is going to be green and yellow? And people are like, what the hell is it green and yellow for?
What is going on here? Yeah, they got their media days next week. So I saw this. It is interesting to me that this is like the new trend of like the next year. I feel like we have an epidemic in documentary society where they're coming out far too soon.
Oh, I just think in general, the sports documentary has jumped the shark a long time ago where it's not as enjoyable anymore.
No.
It's too edited. It's too controlled. I think Magic has one coming out. He's an executive producer, so he's going to have say on all of it.
Yeah.
This is a slightly different thing, and I don't think it can be edited to make the person look good. I thought you were talking about Damar Hamlin's.
Oh, he's got a documentary coming out.
He's got one. He tweeted last night. He watched the final cut, and... He was moved to tears reliving it.
See, that's one where...
That's different, though.
That is different. It's a heartwarming story.
He's not going to edit it to make him look better. It was...
No.
He literally died on the field. That, I'm into.
See, that...
You're into that one? Has enough time passed where you're already ready for a documentary on that?
Yeah.
This is my larger point on documentaries.
2 years removed.
I know, but I remember it. I vividly remember watching it.
But we didn't have,
It's not one of those like, oh my God, remember when that happened to Damar Hamlin? What a crazy story.
But in our life, that's going to be one of the craziest sports
without
moments
a doubt.
We've ever saw.
I don't disagree with you. That to me was what made...
Josh Allen crying with his hands over his mouth
was insane.
Was like, oh my God, I think this guy's dead.
And then Skip Bayless saying, let's move the drill and get back to playing football. This is playoff implications on the line. Like, they should have been fired for that, let alone all the other stuff that he was doing as a Predator. I find it interesting how quickly, and this one is, I grant you, different because it's a heartwarming story.
Reportedly, by the way.
Reportedly. Wow. The Last Dance stuff, like, yes, it happened in COVID, so that unquestionably ballooned its popularity.
Yeah.
But part of it was, like, that was in 1998, man. That was a long time ago. And so there was a lot of that.
What did you learn from it, though?
I mean, not a ton, but I'm sure there were people younger than me that didn't watch. I mean, I didn't remember a lot of the early MJ stuff. I wasn't old enough to remember the first three titles vividly. Right. Like, I didn't remember the beginning of Jordan's career. I wasn't alive when he was drafted.
Sure.
And so I learned a lot in that area. I didn't learn a lot about the back end of it because I remember watching it as a kid. There's something to documentaries in that way teaching me and having me learn something that I probably won't watch the Damar Hamlin one. I'm sure it'll be incredibly powerful, but I remember watching it and how crazy it was doing shows then and how the whole world in the sports community kind of stopped waiting to see if he was going to be okay. We had reporters coming on live from outside of the hospital.
Yeah.
That was 2 years ago.
Well, did you see, by the way, side note, I know we're against it. Did you see that Drexler commented on The Last Dance?
No.
Yeah, I hope I didn't get butt cracked, but I saw he did an interview and he basically came out and he's kind of poo-pooing it.
He poo-pooed it, huh?
Well, he's just like, you're very disrespectful to your opponents from that era.
Mm.
Like, remember the Gary Payton clip?
Yes.
He's like laughing at the laptop, like, or the iPad. Yeah, you beat Gary Payton. Gary Payton also held you to your worst finals performance when he defended you.
He did?
There was an element of Drexler that I kind of was like, yeah. Okay.
I don't know what you're talking about. Jordan did it all on his own. Had no help. His teams were always terrible.
And that was kind of the point.
Single-handedly carried his team to championships year in and year out. That's why he's the GOAT.
Well, I mean, look, he very well is the GOAT for most people. Shaq has him as the GOAT.
Shaq does have
Shaq
him as the GOAT.
Shaq has Kobe number two.
Oh.
LeBron number three.
Oh.
You know, five's better than four.
That it is. I can count. What's a higher number?
Yeah. The Shaq Kobe stuff has been interesting post Kobe's life, actually. But
Very strange.
So I just, you know, these things come out and I'm interested when people have comments on them. Like Drexler was a part of that era, played against him.
Yeah, his storyline was a part of that documentary.
And I find
the
it
shrug.
When the opponent comes out, it's like, yo, man, like I get it. You beat us. Okay, kudos. But we weren't
terrible.
Yeah.
We were pretty good.
And
you had a lot of help too.
I think Mike gives those guys the flowers in real life,
sure.
And I don't think he meant it to come off a certain way, but yeah, there's an element of that. I'm like, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, when our P1's Larry says these documentaries are too soon or infomercials like The Last Dance. It's a controlled environment. Peer programming skewered for an acceptable ending. So yeah, SEC's got one coming out. I'll probably end up watching a clip or two of it just because I'm desperate for football by the time you get to the middle of August.
He wanted more respect for his contemporaries is basically what Drexler was saying. It was like, you made it seem like it was just you.
And you were the only one in the league
forever.
And
there was no other great players. Yeah.
I can understand that perspective from Clyde. No doubt about it. Let's get to a couple of NFL notes. A few things that have lingered. Second round picks now all of a sudden have a ton of leverage. We got wide receiver rankings that came out yesterday. Some guys in the top 10. What are we doing? We'll get to those coming up next on 1080 The Fam.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5 with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego bricks.
Introducing Fidelity Trader Plus, the next generation of advanced trading from Fidelity. Customize your tools and charts and access them seamlessly across desktop, web, and mobile. For faster trades anywhere you go, try the all-new Fidelity Trader Plus. Learn more about our most powerful trading platform yet at fidelity.com/traderplus. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE, SIPC.
Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
Did I see correctly that Bruno Mars is out of debt?
He's out of his debt?
I thought I saw something that
he
is
massive. Like
I think he owed a casino like $100 million from one of his residencies in Vegas. Having a good time.
Living in that penthouse.
I mean, look, I can't act like I wouldn't be that guy if I were that guy. So good for Bruno Mars if he is out of debt, if that is an actual true headline.
You know, one of the funnier moments was discovering a young Bruno Mars is actually in the movie Honeymoon in Vegas. At the very end, when Sarah Jessica Parker, who, by the way, prime Sarah Jessica Parker.
Prime, peak season.
Bruno Mars is the little kid that performs on stage.
Really?
I see the kid in the movie. I watch this and I go, oh my God.
That kid's talented.
That kid looks just like Bruno Mars.
Kid's going
and
places.
The name pops up and it's Bruno something. It's not Mars. It's something
Mars
else.
At
but
the
I'm
time.
Like, oh my God, it was Bruno Mars.
Would you look at that? The news out of the NFL today, Von Miller to the Commanders on a 1-year deal.
Does this do anything for anybody?
No, not for me. I do find this interesting, though, and this is becoming a thing. You mentioned, and I know, I think he was a first-round pick, the Bengals pick that they haven't signed yet.
Sign Scary Terry. That would be bigger news for the Commanders than picking up old-ass Von Miller.
Yeah, it seems like there still could be another trade there. I don't know why they would want to take on IU.
No, you sign him. They're going to sign him.
Yeah, I would if I were them. Because Debo's a little unreliable in terms of health. The second-round pick thing right now going on in the NFL is interesting. So I think it was... God, I can't remember the team. Was it the Browns that gave the fully guaranteed second round? Somebody
yes,
just gave a player a second round pick, a fully guaranteed contract. And everybody around the NFL is like, what are we doing here, dude?
Yep.
And this is now lingering in where this happened with the 49ers earlier this week. They drafted Alfred Collins in the second round.
Yeah.
And he was like legit. He hadn't signed every other pick essentially for them. I believe had signed, is showing up and ready to go. He was holding out, and that's finally done. They reached a contract agreement late last night. He signed a $10.3 million deal over 4 years. It's going to include over $9 million in guaranteed money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's expected to, again, have these big implications league-wide because there had been this impasse between the league and all but two players that were drafted in the second round this year. And it's expected to trigger multiple other second-round deals from happening now that these other guys see what the number that was signed for. And
it was Houston, by the
Houston,
way.
Houston, thank you.
It was Higgins.
Higgins.
Jaden Hidden.
Yes.
Higgins.
And they gave him a fully guaranteed
four-year deal.
Four-year, fully guaranteed second-round pick deal. And everybody around the NFL was like, oh, my God, why would you do that? And now second-round picks are demanding and asking for more and holding out. So this one's a little bit different than the Cincinnati thing because I think that's about recouping money if he doesn't fill out the rest of his rookie deal or if he gets hurt, and that's just the Bengals being cheap. This is second-round picks having some organizations buy the balls and a little bit of leverage right now because these contracts are starting to trickle out.
I'm actually kind of happy for them.
I am, too. They deserve it.
Second-round pick is pretty damn good, dude.
Yes, it is.
And clearly, the team thinks very highly of you. Some teams trade out of the first because they want to pick you in the second, which is, to me, they're viewing you as a first-round pick, but they're just also getting some stuff to move back a little bit. So, you know, I just couldn't care less what this means for the teams.
How will they survive?
I'm happy for the players.
Will
I thought that
okay?
was a great deal for Higgins and Houston. I want to say a Cleveland Brown also got something similar, but maybe I'm thinking, maybe I was just thinking of Higgins.
Maybe Deshaun Watson's on your mind?
No.
No.
That's
no.
That's never the thing.
You don't want Deshaun Watson on your mind?
Nope. I'd like him to just go away and not be seen.
One thing that's been in my NFL notes for a while that we have not talked about that I thought was an interesting theory. So we're going to get a look at likely the first serious two-way player in the NFL this year. And it was one of the more shocking.
You really think we're going to get a real serious two-way, or is it going to be kind of a... He played 9 snaps today on that side.
The way that they moved up in the draft to go get him and talked about him after drafting him, I would be pretty surprised if it wasn't something more
wants.
Than just like, you know, hey, we're going to let you return a punt every fourth game. Like, I don't think it'll be every snap on both sides of the ball. But it's just, there's all sorts of questions about how does it work? Can somebody actually do it? Will he be able to withstand it and all of that? Travis Kelce was on the Bussin' with the Boys podcast. This was like 2 weeks ago. And they were asking him about, how do you think this works? How could you handle that in the NFL? Do you think anybody's capable of doing it? And he basically said, look, I'm fascinated to see how it would work out. I'm paraphrasing. But he said, here's what I would do if we were playing them. And that essentially is every time that he is in at corner, you send the wide receiver that he is guarding on a go route. and you just and
I that, would tire the hell out.
Just
of him.
You're going run and go routes all game, and that's all you're going to cover. And occasionally, maybe sneak in a slant and try and get the guy the ball, but you're just going to make him run. And if that truly becomes a thing where he's playing both ways, that he thinks that'll be the next strategy for teams if he is effective in doing it. Of just how can we tire this guy out by the time you get to the end of the first quarter?
Now, am I mistaken? It sounds like they want him to play corner more than offense.
I believe so. From what I've read, I believe so.
I love the idea. I don't know if that's actually going to happen. I just think in general, playing that side of the ball in the NFL is not what it is in college. So just the physical nature of it, the speed of the guys, their ability to run routes properly, I just think all of that is going to build on him. And look, I think at the beginning, it could be really fun, and maybe he plays 20-some-odd snaps on offense and he plays the rest of the game on defense, and okay, there you go. I also could see a scenario where that fizzles after week three. He's going to go into that Florida humidity.
Yeah.
And that stuff is
early in the year.
It's going to be thick air that you're running in. It's going to feel swampy. And just everything about it is so much worse than in college. And it's not to disrespect men. I think he's an incredible talent. I think the idea of drafting him as high as they did is something I don't buy.
Hmm.
First round talent for sure. Top whatever. But top, what did he get taken? Top whatever he was. Oracle, do you know what he was drafted?
Like a month and a half ago. I thought he was the second overall pick.
You're probably right.
Am I wrong on that?
I know they traded for
him. I'm finding his Wikipedia page.
Anyways, however high.
Yeah, he was the second pick in the
draft. Thank you. That's really high, man.
It's very high.
That's just,
especially for a guy who might end up being not able to play both ways. And then you ask the question, is he legit on either side of the, like, is he a number one guy on either side?
Is he truly elite as a DB?
Or as a wide receiver, if that's the route that you want to go.
Because
it doesn't have to be just the defensive side of the ball. But yeah, just watching how teams handle that and how he's able to withstand it will be one of the more interesting storylines, I think, early in the year. Clearly one of the most gifted athletes we've seen. And his ability to withstand it even in college was remarkable to a level that we've not really ever seen before. We've seen guys dabble and do it, but in terms of the snap count and what he did.
We've never seen that before.
Dude, it was insane. And so, like, can you really do that at the next level in the NFL? And then your point on the humidity, and then if you do get teams game planning around it of like, all right, dude, you want to play wide receiver and corner? We're going to make you run the entire game. Good luck. Good luck in the third quarter. Now we're going to burn you deep because you're tired because you've been playing both ways.
Yep.
Just how that all works out, I find interesting. We talked about the quarterback ratings earlier this week, or rankings, I should say, from NFL executives, GM, scouts, and all that. We got wide receiver rankings that came out yesterday. Some of the names in the top 10 are interesting to me, and I'm just wondering if it's a sign about the wide receiver group in general in the NFL right now. Who are the biggest misses? I'm going to dive into that coming up next.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5 with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other toppings, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Mmm, now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets uncomfortable. Banner civilizations, doomsday prophecies, and events that science still can't fully explain. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we'll play the fart audio in the final segment. Give you an update on the Open Championship day one over at Royal Porsche. If I ask you, Brandon James Sprague, as a noted NFL executive and scout.
Oh, yeah.
Breaking down tape. You're doing the whole thing.
Talked to an NFL GM yesterday.
I'm sure you did. Probably did on the phone.
He said, Sprague, I want you to give thoughts tomorrow. Dirt's going to tee you up.
He said, you got it. You got to be ready to go. Dirt's going to ask you.
Tee me up.
I'm not going to make you go all the way to 10 because that's going to take too long, and I don't want to do that.
This guy playing without a hat, by the way, and I just...
That's the teeter guy I talked about yesterday from Estonia. That's why they were showing him. He's an amateur.
He looks just like a nephew of mine.
He's got no hat. Yeah, he's got long hair and glasses. He looks hilarious.
He looks like Harry Potter's cousin.
First Estonian ever to make it. He holed out on the 37th hole of a play-in. Top five wide receivers in the NFL.
Okay.
Go.
Oh, rank them?
Yeah, you're the NFL scout.
Well, I mean, the obvious top two are kind of in a class by themselves at this point. I go Jefferson. I go Chase.
In that order, or are you just giving me a jumbled one, too?
Yeah, look.
You think Jefferson's one?
I think Jamar Chase.
They would be a hell of a combination.
They were a combination.
If you could combine, I know, isn't that crazy?
They played together in college. It was unfair.
You could not stop
that. It was the greatest team ever.
Yes, it was.
Chase is unbelievable. It is no disrespect in any way. We are talking about the slimmest of margins between these two guys. I've watched Justin Jefferson do things that I don't know if I've seen any player do.
He also doesn't have a quarterback that is widely considered to be in the top three. So he's putting up these level of numbers with Kirk Cousins and last year's Sam Darnold.
Well, there's
a difference there.
I hate to cite one example, but like that catch he had a couple years ago. Do you remember the Minnesota Buffalo regular season game? Do you remember that?
Minnesota.
Buffalo was at the fourth down and the fumble.
Yes.
Dude, Justin Jefferson has, I think, the greatest catch I've ever seen in human history.
Kirk Cousins just said, I'm going to throw it up to him. And I don't care if there's seven people around him.
He one hand snags that baby.
Yeah.
So I go Jefferson one. I go Chase two. I do think A.J. Brown, when he is locked in, is a top five, right?
I'm just asking for their top five. Yep.
Amon-Ra St. Brown is in this for me. You know that about me. We argued about that. After that, I think you're kind of splitting hairs with a few different dudes. I do think Scary Terry, Nico Collins, CeeDee Lamb. Yeah. Like, after the four, it's then into a debate
very
for that
gray area for you for number five.
Yeah, and look, you can argue with the order of these things. That's fine. I'm not really upset if somebody thinks Nico is number three and St. Brown's not top. I think St. Brown is a top five guy. I think he's a true one. I think CD has been unbelievable in Dallas. And Nico, when he plays, stellar. So that's, in some order, that's my top five.
I did chuckle. So we did this with the quarterback ranking earlier this week. This is again on ESPN. It's from NFL scouts, GMs, executives, and all that. And they rank people. And it's remarkable to read into how dumb some people in the NFL are. And just by that, we did this with where some quarterbacks were ranked. Somebody on this list, not on the list, but somebody who was asked to vote on this list, ranked Justin Jefferson the fourth best wide receiver in the NFL.
That's ridiculous.
Can anybody make any argument?
I don't even know if I'd go three.
You cannot name me two wide receivers that are better than Justin Jefferson.
You can't.
He is on one of the most historic paces we've ever seen in the history of the NFL. And he might go on to shatter every receiving record we've ever seen. He is insane what he's done in the first handful of years of his career.
Well, the tough thing I have about this list with all of these positions, by the way.
Who ranks him fourth?
So, I just pulled it up.
You think Tyreek Hill's better? You think CeeDee Lamb's better than Justin Jefferson?
I don't think Tyreek Hill is a top five receiver anymore. That's just my thought. We'll have to see how the season's gonna play out. Like A.J. Brown, and this has happened with quarterbacks too, his highest ranking's three. He comes in at five.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
That's fair.
He's also unranked.
Yeah, somebody doesn't have him as a top 10.
How?
So who are the 10 wide receivers in the league that are better than A.J. Brown?
I don't know. That's what's confusing about some of these lists. Amon-Ra St. Brown is not ranked.
Yeah. From some people. He is in the top 10, but some executives didn't have him ranked. So here are the top 10, according. We'll see if I would compare to Sprague's list. Number one is Jamar Chase this year.
Yep.
Last year he was number three, move up to number one. I tend to agree with you. I would have the same 1-2 combo. I would have Jefferson 1 and Jamar Chase 2.
And if you want to do Chase 1, Jefferson, I don't care.
It's not an offensive thing. They're both the two best wide receivers in the NFL. I would take, I lean Jefferson because of Just how consistent he has been, and the fact that he does not have Joe Burrow throwing him the football, which to me, like who you have around you is a big part of this. Jefferson is number two. Tyreek Hill is number three on this list.
I disagree with that fundamentally.
What are we doing now? CeeDee Lamb, top four wide receiver in the NFL. He's clearly talented. It's interesting to me.
He's a tough one for me.
Yes, me
I think
too.
He's incredibly talented. I think if you put him in a better situation, he makes people maybe say like, yeah, no doubt. But I understand the other side of that where it's like, if he doesn't have a big game, their offense is shot. And he has occasionally a moment where that doesn't happen. And you're like, well, is he good? And I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
I think he is, but yeah. Tough one.
A.J. Brown, five. So you weren't far off on him. He is a top five guy. Amon-Ra St. Brown, six. This is where things get interesting. Because I just think after that, there's a lot of gray area, to
Everything
your point.
Is debate. Like Puka Nakua not being in the top 10.
He's not a top 10 wide receiver.
Okay.
Malik Nabers, already after 1 year, comes in the top seven of wide receivers in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Number eight is Nico Collins in Houston, who you mentioned. Mike Evans, number nine in Tampa.
Yeah.
The longevity of what he's done, the consistency of what he's done, is insane. Number 10 on this list is a guy who we talked about earlier this week getting a contract extension, Garrett Wilson.
Yeah.
Puka Nakua, the biggest missing piece here.
Well, you could certainly say Puka is, especially considering what his rookie season was. It was record-breaking. I think if you have a problem with Malik Nabers.
Malik Nabers already being in there is interesting. Why is Malik Nabers seven and Brian Thomas is not ranked?
Brian Thomas Jr. is unranked. Brian Thomas has less receptions. He had 87 last year. Nabers had 109. But Brian Thomas had more receiving yards and TDs.
Yes, he did. And it wasn't like he had stellar quarterback play from start to finish, because I don't think anybody's feeling good about Trevor Lawrence right now.
Neither did Nabers.
No, I'm not saying that he did, but I'm saying that could have been an argument that you could have used against him. Like if he had played in a...
Thomas had higher yards per catch, too. By almost 5 yards.
And I don't know which one's better. I just find it interesting that one is already seventh and one of them is not inside the top 10. Yeah. When one of them was third in the NFL in receiving yards last year. And it wasn't like Nabers was far behind him. It wasn't a huge difference.
Who would your five be if you did five, not 10?
This is where it was interesting for me. And I don't know what it says about the wide receiver position. I have a really hard time ranking guys after really the top three or four. Like, I have a really hard time doing it. And I feel the same about quarterback play.
I think you split hairs a lot of the time.
Like, CeeDee Lamb, I know, is a good wide receiver. Like, I know he's talented. There's just something about saying he's a top five wide receiver in the NFL that I have a hard time doing. Mm. And maybe that's dumb and laughable to some people. Like, I think Jefferson and Chase are clearly the top two. I think Amon-Ra St. Brown is criminally underrated for everything that he does to help an offense and how good of a wide receiver is. He's a great blocker. He's a great playmaker with the ball. Like, he does all the little things that you want a wide receiver to do. Seems to be a great locker room guy.
Yeah.
And I'd be willing to give him that credit. A.J. Brown has moments where he looks like the most dominant force on the field, and then moments where he completely disappears from games, and you're like, he's reading a book or a diva on the sideline.
Oh, there's no doubt.
Because he had two catches for 9 yards and only three targets, and after the game, he's going to say, why can't the quarterback get me the football? And there's a lot of wide receivers
that do
that. I was going
to say, this whole list is basically
a lot of people
divas.
That do that. But I don't know. I think that was a bigger takeaway for me of just where the wide receiver position is at. And maybe some of these guys, like Nabers and Thomas, and some of these guys who had breakout years last year, will change the way we view it because they turn into such dominant players that they'll be top five guys.
Right.
But I don't feel good about saying any of those other guys outside of really Chase and Jefferson, to be honest with you.
What about Evans?
Evans is good, but he's at this point in his career, is he still there? I'm okay with him being in the top 10.
Another 1,000-yard season.
Is he a top five wide receiver in the NFL still?
Oh, not top five. No, yeah. I wouldn't put in top five. I'm great. I'm okay with him being on the list. I think the other part of this ranking stuff is, are you ranking based on wanting to be right? Or are you ranking based on being right now?
Yes.
So, like, if I make a top five or a top 10 and I don't have Brian Thomas Jr. on my list.
That's a right now ranking, not a future ranking.
He might have 105 catches this season.
Very well could.
For over 1,000 yards and 8 to 12 touchdowns.
Yes.
I would look like a genius having him in that list versus if you don't, it's like, well, I thought he wasn't good enough. And you're
right.
Like, ah. So, I don't know how everybody's ranking this stuff. If they're going for future to be right, or they're just doing it in the exact moment right now.
The racism against Ladd McConkey, too. I see you, NFL executives. I see you. Keeping my guy off the list.
Who is the most left off the list person to you? Because I also think Smith and Jigba is going to prove to be...
JSN could have a great year this year.
Monster year this year.
Look, people would argue the reliability angle of it. I have a hard time with Puka Nacua not being top 10 wide receiver in the NFL.
Well, another one I just remembered that I'm like, yeah, his season might not have been great, but that wasn't it. Like DJ Moore?
Yeah, had a really good year.
When DJ Moore is playing and the quarterback's good and the line can block.
You know who else surprisingly had a really good year last year was Jerry Jeudy in Cleveland. Jerry Jeudy had a really good year last year.
Great pickup for Cleveland last year.
Kind of a throwaway. Like,
remember that revenge game against Denver that they almost won?
With horrible quarterback play?
I think he had over 200 yards receiving in that game.
I know Nacua only played 11 games last year, and so you would argue, well, he wasn't reliable, wasn't healthy, and he's a bit of an odd duck. But 1,500 yards as a rookie, and then 80 catches in 11 games for basically 1,000 yards when he missed almost half of the season. Like, the when he's available, the numbers are there. And I can't tell you 10 wide receivers when healthy that are better than Puka Nacua.
So, yeah, I mean, that's we saw it in the playoff game, right? It was like, if they went to him, you were like, oh no.
Here he comes.
A Cowboy fan says, OBJ catch, still the greatest of all time. Three-finger catch.
I'm not going to disagree with
that. Jefferson catch, though?
God, fourth down.
Go rewatch that.
That's one of the wildest games in the NFL in the last 10 years. Because Buffalo had it. Minnesota got stopped on the goal line, if I remember correctly, to try and take the lead.
And then Buffalo.
Buffalo was trying to quarterback sneak it, and then they fumbled the snap in their own end zone. And then Minnesota got the ball back, but they had like a 4th and 20 that they had to convert, and Jefferson made a one-handed catch to convert it, and they went on to win that game.
You know what's going
to
happen is, I'm pulling up this catch, I'm going to rewatch this catch and say it's better than the OBJ catch, even though most people say, no, that's incorrect.
You got to watch them both during the break.
I don't need to watch the OBJ one.
You remember it, you've seen it too many times.
The defender's kind of away from, it's a remarkable.
It's insane.
It's probably the best.
It's insane.
But the Jefferson one was in traffic.
It wasn't, and it was a fourth down.
And it was fourth down.
So there you go. NFL wide receiver rankings come out. It is ranking season. It's fun to debate that kind of stuff. And I just have a hard time with that position. And I think it's somewhat similar to quarterback.
Fourth and 28,
dude. He one-handed it in front of 8 defenders.
Well, there are
the entire defense is right there.
There's one defender on him, but there are like 6 around. He gets hit and still pulls this backwards with one hand down.
Wild. Absolutely wild. That's why he's number one. We'll wrap it up with some Scottie Scheffler help and a look at the Open Championship leaderboard next on The Fan. Listener asking if this one got deleted. It did not.
I'm like, yeah.
Still I was listening to the boys this morning. I was listening to the boys this morning.
Is that me?
That's you.
Boy, I really did sound.
You sound exactly
I thought that was
like
him.
That's the best impersonation. Like I said, I was.
That's one of the best that's ever happened on this show. We'll do it again, and I will shut the hell up. Because when you were in the middle of it, I couldn't help but laugh.
There were a couple giggles at the end.
I don't know if I can.
It was perfect. You could do it again. You got it in your bag.
I was listening to the boys this morning.
That's pretty good.
It's good.
I don't know if I can do that again.
You got it in you. We don't have to do it right now.
No.
At another time.
Not ready.
You'll bring it out, and we'll talk about it. let's get to this. Open Championship going on. Opening day, Royal Portrush, Scottie Scheffler, slow start for him, but got hot on the back nine, found his way to 3 under. He's one shot off the lead at
just
the end of the opening day.
Just missed a birdie putt on
just
18.
Missed a birdie on 18. 17th hole of the day.
Okay.
Sticks one close. Here's how it sounded.
So far above the green, downwind you can get onto this green, but Scheffler.
That's extraordinary.
Was that a Scheffler fart?
I kind of hope it was him when he's doing the Scheffler twist with the feet.
Caddy,
somebody left. I mean, you see what Ted Scott's wearing today? People are making Oregon Duck jokes.
Oh.
He's wearing like a green sweater, or maybe it's a yellow sweater with like a green vest. And some people are saying he looks like he's getting ready for Oregon Boise State in week 7 at Autzen Stadium. Just green and yellow for Ted Scott today.
Go.
Scheffler fart. I'm telling you, sometimes it helps a golf game. You get a little tight. You're a little nervous out there. Let one fly. Ease the tension, baby. You got to ease the tension when you're out on the golf course.
I love how the BBC commentators, though, just acknowledged it and started laughing.
Yes, you have to.
Where, like, I don't know what it was on the American broadcast, but they're probably trying to not make an issue of it.
That fart sounded exactly like every time my stepdad farted. He'd just go, oh, Mark and Spider.
Good looking leaderboard. I know some names at the top. Everybody's like, who the hell are those guys? But Scheffler's
Rory
three
just
under.
Just made another birdie.
Rory's at one.
There's
a Phil had a great opening day. There's a monk. There's a legitimate monk atop the leaderboard. Not quite atop, but
Thailand.
Close to it. From Thailand. He's three under par. Sergio, the Spanish rat's 200 today. Rom, Lowry. A lot of guys in the mix. And it should be a fun rest of the day of golf. That will do it for us, folks. Thanks for being a part of our Thursday, everybody. If you missed any of the show, go check the podcast, 1080thefan.com, at Turton Spragan, at 1080thefan on Twitter. Thanks, everybody, for watching on YouTube. We actually had a guest on YouTube today, Josh Peterson, our buddy from Omaha, talking some college football. So thanks for watching on YouTube. Like the video, subscribe to the channel if you have not done so yet. Enjoy the rest of the golf. Let your farts out. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 6 a.m. Colin is next. You're listening, 1080 The Fan.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with. And Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy. It's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5 with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other toppings, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Mmm, now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
Understanding power requires more than headlines. I'm Peter Hamby, host of The Powers That Be, a podcast from Puck examining politics, economics, and media to provide context, analysis, and clarity without sensationalism. We ask how power operates, who benefits, and what's at stake. If you want to move beyond breaking news to deeper understanding, join us on The Powers That Be. New episodes every weekday. Follow The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.